Today, expect the unexpected as uncertainty spirals. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics World, and this post covering finance and property news. Funny how bond markets seem to look past most of what RBA Governor Michelle Bullock said in her post-monetary policy committee meeting yesterday, but remember, they are gamblers. And as expected, the RBA cut the cash rate by 25 basis points to 3.85% in its second reduction this year.
So as you know, today the board decided to cut the cash rate by 25 basis points, and that takes the official rate to 3.85%. Now, we've done this because the most recent quarterly CPI confirmed that both headline and underlying inflation are now under 3%. And if you ignore the more volatile items in the headline CPI, our forecasts see the underlying pulse of inflation around the midpoint of the 2 to 3% range over the next year or so. So price increases have slowed and it's fairly broadly based, and this is very good news. The board's strategy over quite some time has been to bring inflation down while avoiding a sharp rise in unemployment.
Revelations during the press conference that the board had considered an outsized 50 basis point move prompted traders to dial up their bets for further rate cuts.
I'm from AAP. Was this a unanimous decision by the board, and how much discussion was there of a 50 basis point cut or conversely a hold?
Okay. So first of all, it was a consensus decision. What the board discussed was two options, hold or lower. There was a bit of a discussion about hold, and that was sort of put aside pretty quickly. The discussion then was about a cut and how big, and there was a discussion about 50 and 25. The board was of the view that 25 was the right number on this occasion. I think the way I would think about it, describe it, is that if you put the international things to the side for one moment and just ask the question, if we were just looking at where the domestic economy was at the moment, would we be looking at lowering rates or not? And as I said earlier, with inflation in the band and also unemployment doing pretty well, we think there is a bit of scope to lower interest rates. And then if you add the international uncertainty, that sort of gives you a little bit of confidence that yes. So I think we said in the statement that the risks have actually balanced up a bit, with a bit more on the downside coming into play now. So yes, there was a discussion of that, but on balance, I think the board was of the view that, I know the board was of the view that 25 basis points was the right thing for now. Doesn't rule out that we might need to take action in the future, to David's earlier questions, but for now, we felt that was the right number.
There was an argument about a 50 basis point move, and we did debate it, and you'd expect us to debate it, but quite frankly, it wasn't the strongest argument in the room, she said. While bond prices climbed after the central bank announced a rate cut, the rally accelerated during the media briefing. 2-year government bonds plunged around 16 basis points at one point, while the 10-year rate moved a modest 9 basis points to 4.4%. The moves also pushed the Aussie dollar down 0.6% to 64.1 cents. In money markets, bond traders rapidly dialed up rate cut expectations and now expect the cash rate to end the year at 3.17%. That compares to 3.3% before the policy meeting and implies between 2 and 3 additional cuts before Christmas. The Reserve Bank noted the risks to inflation were more balanced as international developments were expected to weigh on the economy. So far, we've managed to get inflation back at the same time as keeping the employment market on a relatively good footing, Bullock said in the press conference. So I think it's so far so good. And the narrow path was pretty much written off now as a statement. But the truth is, the Reserve Bank's statement on monetary policy released at the same time actually contained the word uncertain a total of 134 times. This echoed recent statements from the Federal Reserve and also the Bank of England, among others. At a post-decision press conference, Bullock went further, explaining that the environment was not just uncertain, but also unpredictable. Scenarios released on Tuesday suggests everything from a relatively benign outcome of a modest decline in global growth that puts downward pressure on both GDP growth and inflation, which is the central bank's base case, to a trade war scenario that smacks growth and causes deflation, to a trade peace scenario, which is positive for growth, but also reignites inflation concerns. It's also worth noting that Bullock's warning, which basically boils down to anything that can happen, comes after our biggest corporates released a pretty tepid set of earnings updates in early May. Notably, there were more downgrades than upgrades, which followed a middling February reporting season. Yet, despite all the uncertainty that Bullock is warning of, the trade war, geopolitical tensions, doubts over China's next move, investors have pushed the benchmark back to within 2.4% of the all-time high achieved in the middle of February. Now, I get investors are always looking ahead, let's say 12 months into the future, and right now they expect earnings growth over the 2026 financial year of more than 6%. Well, rate cuts, of course, will help that, so Tuesday's decision is good news. But hang on. After the impressive rally that continued on Tuesday, the ASX 200 is sitting on a price-to-earnings multiple of 18.2 times, well above the long-run average of around 13 times. This seems a bit rich to me, literally. Jamie Dimon's warning that US investors are extraordinarily complacent surely applies to Australia too. Investors are buying a market that is expensive in several measures, whether it's PE multiples or the fact that the market's dividend yield at 3.5% is well below the 10-year government bond yield at 4.5%, and they are doing so at a time when the earnings recovery narrative is already frankly looking rocky and may not be supported by rate cuts in the way the markets think that it will, or those cuts may come with a much weaker growth outlook. Of course, the property sector went straight to the positive impact of the market. Tim Reardon, chief economist at Housing Institute of Australia, said home building was its lowest level in more than a decade, and this rate cut could increase established home prices, which would encourage more people to build their own residences. Heartened by their increased borrowing capacity, but still facing high prices for existing dwellings, homehunters may prefer to put deposits down on off-the-plan homes, unlocking more housing supply. The federal government, of course, is pursuing an ambitious target of 1.2 million new homes to be built by the middle of 2029, or is that 2030? Although analysts predict the target won't be met. Even if there are multiple more cuts this year and they continue into 2026, that still won't be enough to achieve the government's goal of 1.2 million homes, Reardon told the AFR. We require more fundamental reform to tax and regulatory issues and to increasing the supply of labour. We can't rely on interest rates to increase the supply of housing to meet demand. Louis Christopher, the managing director of SQM Research, believes residential construction could slightly pick up following the rate cut, but the industry still faces challenges. An interest rate cut could stimulate Australia's housing construction industry by improving borrowing conditions and boosting approvals, he said, but its impact would be tempered by labour shortages, high fixed costs and time lags. If prospective home buyers start to pour into the market, Christopher predicts property values could rise by 6 to 10% this calendar year across the nation. More home buyers will be in the market after this rate cut, he said. We are first likely to see the impact via a rise in auction clearance rates, which have steadied in recent weeks following the outcome of the election. Thomas McGlynn, the president of the Real Estate Institute of New South Wales, said the February rate cut has been expected to inject much needed energy into the property market, but it turned out to have been a short-term sugar hit that soon wore off. Today's rate cut is going to probably have a much bigger impact on the marketplace than what the February rate cut did, McGlynn said. I do feel that the interest rate cut today will give sellers confidence to come to market. Many people are still struggling, so we do need to probably see another couple of interest rate cuts before that really does provide some breathing room for mortgage holders. Actually, Bullock said on Tuesday that the possibility of a lift in house prices would not deter her from cutting the cash rate again, arguing that housing affordability was primarily an issue for state and federal governments.
And from Livewire Markets, mortgage holders will be happy today as they've got more interest rate relief. I think your own assumptions, you called them, are for more rate cuts ahead. The market's forecasts are for more rate cuts. In April, I think we saw Australian house prices at a record high, gold prices near a record high, Bitcoin prices near a record high. I think the CBA share price
hit a record high today. I think it's up 40% over the past year. So if you're wealthy, you're getting wealthier, right? But what's your message for younger people and renters who feel like, you know, housing's becoming unaffordable for them and who don't own assets? Thanks.
Yeah. I don't have a message from the Reserve Bank. I guess my personal reflection is that there's nothing the Reserve Bank can do about these affordability issues of housing. This is an issue of housing demand and housing supply. And increasingly this issue is finding its way into the governments, both state and federal governments, and that's where the focus has to be. And I think increasingly they are. There is a recognition that over many years, this didn't just pop up overnight. This has been brewing for many years. So, you know, there's nothing that I or the bank can do about this. We've got to focus on our inflation and our employment mandate, which is actually a really good thing we can do for young people and renters. Keep inflation low and make sure they have jobs. That's really important. That's what we can do. What governments can do is look at the supply-demand imbalance in housing. And I'm confident now that at least there is some focus in that direction.
Of housing is supply and demand. If we start thinking about do we lower interest rates because of housing prices, we're going to take our eye off the ball, which is inflation, employment, and I don't think that would be the right thing to do. I acknowledge that some people are worried that as interest rates come down, housing prices will rise, but other policies have really got to step up here and address what is a housing shortage, she said. The National Housing Supply and Affordability Council on Wednesday warned the Albanese government that it was on track to fall 262,000 homes short of its target to build the 1.2 million homes. And Cotality Research Director Tim Lawley said he did not expect a significant acceleration in prices. Several factors continue to constrain price growth, including stretched affordability, cautious lending practices, and the reality that despite 50 basis points of easing, interest rates remain relatively in restrictive territory, he said. And RBC Capital Markets Chief Economist Su Lin Ong said she expected a 3.5% rise in national house prices this year, but conceded the risks were to the upside. And AMP Chief Economist Shane Oliver said any price rise will be modest, and he only expected a 3% gain in property values this year. Even with two rate cuts, affordability was still a challenge at current home value levels, and capacity to pay remained well below the levels seen during the pandemic, when mortgage rates were between 2 and 3%, Oliver said. Nevertheless, he said, the rate reductions were positive for home prices. They take pressure off existing homeowners who may have been struggling with their mortgages, and they increase the amount a borrower can borrow from a bank and hence pay for a property, which supports demand, Oliver said. So it's worth reflecting that history suggests that once rates start falling, property prices don't wait around. Bank of Queensland Chief Economist Peter Monckton has crunched four decades of data and says a 10 to 15% rise over the next 2 years is a reasonable bet, no matter how many cuts Bullock ends up delivering. There were smaller price rises in both the early 1980s and 1990s, but on both those occasions, the unemployment rate was above 10%. Currently, the unemployment rate is within touching distance of 50-year lows, he said. And on the flip side, Monckton said that the extraordinary 20% plus gains seen in the 80s and the early 2000s and during the pandemic were also off the cards over the next couple of years. With more buyers set to flood in and not enough homes to meet them, the next question is where the pressure will hit hardest. Since 2020, house prices have grown by 60%. That's double the rate of apartments, as the rapid shift to working from home boosted demand for larger standalone residences with spare rooms. But with houses now about 30% more expensive than the unit, Monckton thinks that it's unlikely the price of standalone homes can sustainably outperform apartments and townhouses, short of a large decline in interest rates or a big jump in household disposable incomes. Affordability constraints means capital cities could once again outperform regions. Since the pandemic, regional prices have soared 74%, outstripping capital cities, where values have risen 44% on average. The strong growing mean capital city property prices have gone from being around 60% more expensive than the regions to just 35%, close to a 15-year low. And Monckton expects growth over the next couple of years to be strongest in Hobart, Darwin, Melbourne and Canberra, the cities where values have historically been low compared to the long-run relationship with Sydney house prices. But to me, the global uncertain backcloth from tariffs to conflicts, rising government debt and strong bond yields, as well as massively leveraged mortgage holders in Australia, puts all of this into a better context. So at very least, like the RBA, we should be considering different scenarios, something of which, of course, I do in my monthly modelling updates. And whilst there are some certain scenarios where home prices will be driven higher, still, despite the gap to incomes growth becoming ever wider, other scenarios could also be considered. So the only thing which is certain today is that, well, uncertainty rules, and despite all the hype. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.